Thank you for waiting. It's embarrassing to be at a transportation work session because your car wouldn't start, to be late. So I clearly should have taken the bus, but didn't. So
well said.
My apologies. Mr. Manager.
Well, thank you all for coming. Oh, yes, thank you, Sheila. We probably want to stand for the pledge, I think.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, republic for which it stands, one nation.
All right. Thank you for coming to this particular work session. I have rarely been more excited to present something to you. So we're going to do a couple of things that aren't common in our work sessions. First, I'd like to ask you a question. I'd like you to write down your answer or somehow record it, type it on the computer. It doesn't need to be more than one word. But here's the question, and everyone in the audience, please do this as well. Everyone watching at home, feel free to participate. Here's the question. It's I'll read it a couple times. If you could fix the one most important thing about transit, what would it be? If it was within your power to fix the one most important thing with transit, what would it be? Now you can think about that and write it down. I'm going to tell a little brief story and then hand it off to John Glasscock, who will, I think, set the stage for us. And then Drew Brooks will really walk us through what I am very proud to show you today. And even Barbara Buffalo will help us out in the story we want to pitch to you. This is a pitch. I make no bones about it in that regard. So here's the story. I was in my office one day about a month ago, must be, and I got a call from John Glasscock, who said he wanted to come down and talk to me about transit and could he interrupt me. Now, as a city manager, I have to admit I rarely get time to catch up, right, to get to the email, to get to the desk. And if you've been in my office, as you have, you know that. So John knows that's fairly precious time. So my calendar with Google is open. People can see it. And so John knew I was doing catch-up work. And so for him to ask, I knew that he knew it's important. And thus I knew, okay, this must be important. So yes was my answer. I said, yes, come down. We'll talk. So I was expecting John. And I got John and the staff of the transit utility. So that piques my interest. Wow, this is really big, you know. And they put probably the biggest map I've ever seen on my table. And they proceeded to wow me with a proposal. They told me they had listened to everything everyone said about transit. They looked at what other transit services were doing. They thought about all of their customers. And then they made a decision. They made a decision to own the problems and fix them all. So I was so delighted that I asked them to come pitch you the same proposal. So my hope is you will say yes too. John.
Thank you, sir. So we're here to talk about transit, but let's first talk about the future of transportation in general. There's been a lot of talk about a high-speed rail going from Kansas City to Jeff City to St. Louis. And so I want to ask you, if that happens, right now we're connected to the interstate, how would we connect to that? Because that's the future of transportation. How would Columbia connect to that? Would it be by car, its own rail system, by bus? You know, that's reality. They're studying that right now. There's a company called Tesla. Anybody heard of Tesla? They have developed an electric car that can travel in excess of 400 miles on a single charge. Again, this car is said to be coming to the market within 2 to 3 years at a cost of $30,000. That's a game changer because how we fund transportation is through gas tax in this state. So let's talk about congestion a minute. We've all talked about that at the Grasslands, at the stadium. How will Columbia look in 20 years? You know, China experienced last year a traffic jam that was 100 miles long. It took 11 days to clear. So history tells us that we cannot build our way out of congestion with more roads. Look at any modern city today, and you will see what I mean. We built the interstate system, and the people have forgotten how to use other modes of transportation to get around. The interstate system is now congested. We're talking about building a third lane across the state of Missouri. The public works staff has been doing some soul searching. We need a total transportation system that is interconnected regionally to Columbia. We have a good road network, so we started with transit. If you look on your screen, transit started in 1965 as a municipal bus line. That's our first logo. Then came CATS, if you can remember that, Columbia Area Transit System. And lastly, Columbia Transit. And so the question mark is, so what does the future hold? We've been listening. We were told we need to be innovative. And so I sat around and thought about that for a while. And one day I had the staff in my office, and I said, okay, let's take the heart out of this system. Let's pull the Wabash completely out of it. I said, let's think about a cross. If you think of a cross in the city, north and south, Providence, all the way through, and Broadway's east and west. So that's a cross. Let's connect those crosses on the ends with circular route. So we have connectivity. So we have a citywide crossing, but we have neighborhoods as well covered. So my direction to them was build me a model that does this. So I'm going to let staff present their idea to you today. And Drew?
Thank you for the opportunity to talk about this today. We're really excited, and we hope that you will be too when you take a look at this. First and foremost, I was wondering if council would mind sharing what they wrote down as the things that they would like to change.
Sure, Drew. I wrote down three things, and they're probably sort of in priority.
Can I say I knew you would do that?
I just did one long sentence.
Well, my first one is so overarching that it's sort of a no-brainer, and if we could fix one important thing about transit, it would be the budget. But the other two things I wrote down were the frequency of the service at any given point, and the effectiveness of communication about the system to the public.
I had written as a backbone a single east-west service with frequent headway and a north-south service with frequent headway, and that's the part I'm waiting to hear about is the headway.
Okay.
I think the funding's important. I wrote shorter, more frequent and direct routes that more people can use.
You asked for one word, so my word is innovation.
Right. My word is accessibility.
Right. Great. Well, I hope that we're going to address all of those today. I think we do, and I hope you'll see that as we go forward. Well, I first wanted to talk about some things that we're working on in the present. So over this summer, we're going to be upgrading our technology, which is going to help us in a lot of different ways. This project will be done by 1st of August. Some of the bits will kind of trail in after that, but those won't be visible necessarily to the public. But we'll be done with this by the summer. We're talking about, you know, adding GPS units, global positioning to every single vehicle where we can automatically locate them. This leads into, you know, smartphone apps, texting options where someone could text if they're at a bus stop, and it would text them back and tell them when that bus, next bus is going to be there. We're also adding automatic vehicle or passenger counters. That little slide there looks a lot like just a lot of equipment, and that's exactly what it is. It won't really be visible to the customer, but what that allows us to do, tied into that GPS unit, we'll be able to find out exactly where people are boarding and alighting. So as they leave the bus and as they board the bus, much like your garage door where you pass through that little beam, it'll trigger that, and it'll mark it by GPS, and we'll be able to then see exactly where our customers are kind of going and where they're boarding. That's going to be a game changer for us, because we're going to be able to be very nimble about where we decide where routes are going to go, and we'll have data to back it up. It won't just be decisions that we're making kind of anecdotally or arbitrarily. In addition, tied in with that GPS will be auto annunciators. So for the sight impaired, it will announce stops. Our drivers are supposed to do that, as you can imagine. Trying to make sure that every driver does that every time is kind of like herding cats. So we want to automate that process. You'll see on that slide also there's an internal sign for the hearing impaired that will also show the same amount of information. So those will also be added as well. Since I've been with the city for about 5 years now, I've been asked about Google Transit and when we were going to tie in with Google Transit and have a trip planner, and this will also be tied in with this GPS procedure. We'll be able to tie into all of that, and someone can type in exactly where they want to go and where they're at, and it will give them the trip. And you know, if you do it now, it'll tell you how to get there by car, but it will also tell you how to get there by bus in the future. So we're very excited about having that feature. In addition, we'll be improving our paratransit efficiencies. We're upgrading our software and completely changing how we operate our paratransit system. We'll be going completely paperless. Every van will have a tablet on it. All of the manifests, all of the changes will be done directly over that tablet, integrating back into our system. There'll be no paper. There'll be no data entry at the end of the day. As you can imagine, there's hours of data entry after each day with this paper manifest come back, and then we have to enter all of that information back into the system. So we're going to see quite a few efficiencies there as well. We're also looking at vehicle efficiencies, trying to see if there's some either smaller or more fuel-efficient vehicles that we can start using. And as we do future vehicle purchases, we'll be looking at those options as well so that we can improve what we're doing in the paratransit side, because it's a very expensive part of our business. So where we're going in the future. As John mentioned, we sat down after that meeting, and we kind of pulled out the magic markers, if you will, and we developed a project, and we're calling that project Como Connect. Again, this is a proposed project. We expect that this will be months and months in the making. We expect that we'll have a lot of public comment, a lot of people involved in this process, a lot of stakeholders. We would hope that we would have your support and your insight into what you want to see out of it. But again, it's kind of the name of a project. And what we see is that this is a strategic plan to kind of renew trust with the community and provide a service that everyone can use, not just that you have to use. If you have to use it, it's an adequate system or barely adequate system. We want to get to a point where anybody can make a choice to use the system. But it started with that simple idea. We sat down with my staff, with Dale Wynn and Mary Ellen Lee and Rob Davis and a lot of folks in transit, and we literally just sat down and we started drawing with dry erase markers on a map. And you'll see that map there where we just started kind of, we sat down and tried to identify all of the places that we thought people were trying to get to or where we were picking them up. It kind of started to look a little bit like John Madden's zeros and X's up there, like a playbook. But from that initial idea, we came up with this project. And it's really a strategic plan. We want to have a plan for the future. We want something that is kind of a core plan that we can jump off from and expand as we need to. We want to be innovative both in the concept and the process of how we do it. We want to be responsive to our customers and our stakeholders. And we want to design it, as I said, for growth. We want to be able to expand as we can. So it's more than just a realignment of routes. We had two kind of global ideas that we want to govern over everything we do, and that's to live within our means and have a customer-focused approach. So those two things are the core of what we're doing. So looking at what the customer is really looking for and doing it within budget is the top priority. The more detailed objectives We want to restructure our fares and passes to prepare for mobile payments in the future. If you look at that little picture there, I'm sorry, skipped slides, but that picture was of a fare box where you could actually touch your phone to it or scan your phone there and actually pay for a pass there. And we want to get to the point where there's not just some one central location where you buy a pass. We also want to rename, rebrand, remarket. We've kind of structured everything with black and gold themes, but maybe it's something different. Maybe there are different color schemes and different logos and different names. Eventually, again, Como Connect for us is the name of the project, but we anticipate that there'll be a day where we rename, rebrand, and then market thoroughly the entire system, and that's what we'd like to see as a part of this project. And then, of course, the biggest piece of it is a complete fixed route system restructure. What we would do there, we would hope to adjust our hours of operation, expand our route coverage, have shorter wait times, and a more efficient network system. We know we cannot continue to operate the orbital pulse system. It's kind of an artifact of a very different city that doesn't exist today. We just are too far out, and we can't get in and back in 40 minutes. We have to do something different. So what that looks like is a map something like this. And we'll kind of dive into this, and we'll dial into each route more directly so you can kind of see what those things are, because obviously it's very difficult to look at these maps, and we'll have maps available for you after the work session. We see this as a draft concept. We expect a process to implement this type of change to possibly take us as long as 18 months, where we would get everyone involved and really fine-tune these routes. And get them where they need to be before we roll it, and make sure that everybody understands them before we get out there. We don't want to just throw something out there and then have it be confusing and really put people in a lurch. Obviously, this would include public hearings, vetting by various commissions, stakeholders, and governing bodies, and lots of analysis once we get that technology up. So as soon as we get that technology involved in August, we hope then that we can start looking at the current routes and seeing that we made the right choices, because obviously we're realigning and moving away from certain things. We want to make sure those were the right choices and that we're not stranding someone somewhere. In the room, you're going to see a variety of maps. These were produced by Dr. Gehrke and the GIS team, and this one over here is overlaying the high school boundaries. We have ones overlaying income and population, ward maps. I think there's one I'm missing somewhere there. But oh, and snow routes, how we cover these routes fit into the snow route system. So afterwards, you might want to take a look at those, because I think they're pretty valuable information as well. So back to this system. What we've got here are two core connector routes. The gold route, it's very difficult to see, but the gold route in the middle is the north-south, and then, of course, the east-west going this way. And then these neighborhood routes, which are the ones that surround there and try to connect back into those two major routes. The two core connector routes, we envision those as being about an hour long in total duration, but having four or more buses, depending on the time of day, for no more than a 15-minute headway and peak service, so wait time of 15 minutes. And then off-peak might be at the most 30 minutes.
Can you explain that further, the core?
Sure, yeah, we'll be talking about each route individually for sure, absolutely. And then, of course, those seven neighborhood routes, we anticipate each of them having one bus on them at no more than 30 minutes. So if you look there, you'll see these green dots all around the city. There are 35 connections where all of these routes intersect throughout the city, as opposed to the one connection that we have today, which is the Wabash Station. We've also looked at kind of coverage areas. So if you see the brown lines, that's our current routes, and the green is the expanded routes. What this will also do, we'll back to that issue of our paratransit efficiencies, this will allow more of the disabled that use the paratransit system to actually ride the fixed route system should they choose. And that's a much less expensive ride than a paratransit system, for sure. So here's looking at that first route, which is the, we call it number one. If you look up at the top right-hand corner, you'll see the one, and then in the tiny circle, you'll see a number 12. That 12 is referencing how many connections there are on that particular route. So there are 12 connections. It might be the same route, intersects it more than once, but there are 12 different connections on that route. So I'm going to blow that up a little bigger, and you'll see the top half, which goes up to Blue Ridge. It goes past Hickman High School, comes back through to by Columbia College in that area. We are anticipating two buses going in each direction at minimum. So you're going to have a bus passing you on either side of the street. So that allows for you to take a very short trip, maybe one direction and then back, rather than having to ride the entire loop all the way around the system. So then to look at the bottom half of that. So as you see, it cuts into the core campus, then also goes down and hits most of those major apartment complexes down in the south. We see this as kind of taking the place of the black and gold route. In peak service, we would anticipate that we would probably add a couple of buses on the south part of this route to pick up that heavy traffic that we have in the mornings from the apartment complexes. We would anticipate that we would still have contracts with them for pass sales so that they could use those, that it wouldn't change that relationship, we would hope. We kind of call this route Fast Cat on steroids. We're kind of looking at it as something that is hitting that core campus and also hitting those other places where the students live and where they want to go. So then the east-west corridor. So the number two route, we'll break that out again. So this one kind of mirrors a little bit the test route that we did this spring for the QP Express. And what we're trying to do is, if you look at that school boundary, is to allow for more high school students to use a route as well as everyone else and commute to high school at Hickman High School or Douglas High School. So this goes right through that area as well. Again, buses going in both directions, so depending on where you're at, pretty quick turnaround. Then on the other side of the route goes out to Conley Road, and you'll see that it connects with three other routes that take you out to Keene Street and parts beyond from there. So this is a route that's to the north. This is obviously, it's hard even for us to see here, but going up to Brown School Road and up through that area, connecting to nine other points within the route system. This one takes you a little farther to the west. This was one that gets up to Route B, or Brown Station area, and then connects all the way over to Mexico Gravel Road. This route, the 5, goes all the way out to Battle High School. We would anticipate that dotted line would be an extension that we would probably only do at certain times of the day. That would really just be an extension to Battle when it's important for the students to get to and from. We don't anticipate that would be something that we would run all day, but if ridership necessitates that it go farther and more often, we can do that as well.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So did you look at the population in this area and how many students will be served by that purple route?
Yes,
actually?
We did. Yes, and so, if you look at the population maps, you'll see that we're covering that area quite a lot, and we also have another route that Brown route will connect into it and get those same groups of students that are using that. Also on the red route, it will connect into it as well, so it'll be just one hopefully short trip and a transfer to get to that route if you're in another area of that boundary.
Neighborhood routes, a lot of them look sort of loopy, and mm-hmm. they would be one-way loops.
And they would be one-way. That's right. At the current, because what we're trying to do is use the current resources. We're trying to stay within our budget. So, if we were to expand at some point, then we could. That would be probably the first place that we would expand is to add additional buses on those routes that necessitated it in those locations. So the number 6, I'll break that apart because it's a really long route. Or at least lengthy on a map. Using Highway 63, though, we can cover the territory quite well. This gets you all the way up to Keene Street and connects into the red again and then brings you down south all the way down to Grindstone Parkway and to like the CMSE workshop and that general area, and of course Limon for industrial work. This route takes you south by like some of the, again, some more of the student apartments, gets all the way down to Old Plank Road by Rockbridge High School, pardon me, and connects again into the gold route and also the blue route on the other side, which we'll talk about now. This is one of our biggest complaints is that we don't go down Scott Boulevard. And so this route would connect to the end of the red around, say, Hy-Vee and Walmart and that general area on the west side, and then go down Scott Boulevard and come back across and go all the way up Forum Boulevard to the Forum Shopping Center area and kind of connect through there. There's a lot of new medical facilities going in along there. I think there's a Boone Hospital clinic going in along there somewhere. And we're hoping that that will be very heavily used since we get the complaint about Scott Boulevard quite frequently. This route is designed to just kind of connect some more of those neighborhoods that are south of Broadway, and then also to get up toward Rusk Rehab and that general area and Bernadette in through there. So this one is just more of is really just trying to go through the neighborhoods and connect again to those major routes.
And I don't see arrows there. Is that all one way too?
Yes, that would also be a one way, right? So what we don't have on here is some sort of downtown orbiter. And what our thinking here is that with this change in how we're doing things, we want customer feedback on and everyone's feedback on what that would look like. We've kind of identified a general area of where we think that ought to go. But that might be something different. It might be a park and ride. It might be something more like the FastCat. It might be something else. But we haven't identified what that route would look like directly. So we're also proposing to change the hours of operation. Trying to stay within the budget, we don't think we can go much later, but what we think we should do is kind of level out the hours. So rather than have those two evenings of the week where we just go maybe an hour and a half later, make all days of the week, or all weekdays rather, end at 8 p.m. Right now, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, a person pretty much can get home and that's about it from work if they work a 9-to-5 type job. This will allow somebody to go have dinner, go do a little shopping all five days of the week and get home afterwards. And then Saturday, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m., we would just go expand a little bit there, go to 8 p.m., and we've heard that we don't go early enough on Saturdays, so we'll go start at 9 a.m. there. So balancing the budget. As I said, what we've proposed here is staying within the current budget. It's not expanding beyond that. It's not, saving drastic amounts of money. It's really just trying to restructure what we've got with what we're doing. Some things, though, that we're looking at for other revenues. There's a proposal to put an ordinance to raise parking garage and lot rates by $10 per month. Conservatively estimated, that would be an annual revenue increase of $292,000. What this would allow is for us to match more federal dollars. So we get federal operating funds. Right now, we're not able to match all of the federal dollars that are available to us. And we would be able to do that to it. So basically, that $292,000 becomes almost $600,000 if we do something of that nature. We would propose that parking tag holders would also receive a park and ride bus pass that would be good for unlimited rides on all routes for as long as they pay for the parking space. So that might tie into something like this park and ride model downtown or something of that nature. Also, under balancing the budget, we've heard a lot of complaints about the advertising on the buses, one ad in particular. But we might consider discontinuing advertising when the contract is up in December. That would be a potential annual loss in revenue of $95,000 at our current rate of what we're selling. So we might take three steps forward and take one step back if we did this, but that's a proposal that's out there.
And yeah. I imagine there's an option of just reducing the advertisement to a small, attractive sign on
that. I think that could be done. I think that the current company that we're with wouldn't bid on something of that nature just because it would reduce their revenues quite a lot. Where they make the money is on the full wraps. So we'd have to look at a completely different structure and advertise as such when we bid that out. So
who pays to unwrap the bus if we don't renew this contract?
We can easily tear those down. I mean, they come off pretty easy. So we could take them off ourselves, yeah. Sure, right. Obviously, if we did end in December, there would be contracts still active that would have to kind of grandfather off out, if that works, if that's the right word. But yeah, they would have to get those done. So I'm going to let Barbara come up and talk about some other funding options that are more capital related, and then we'll kind of close this out.
Thank you. Can you hear me? So about a month ago when I heard the rumblings that Columbia Transit was looking at redoing kind of their, either routes or just re-looking at the whole system as a whole, the Department of Transportation, the U.S. Department of Transportation, announced their Tiger Grant Fund award, and it's a really short turnaround. But the Tiger Grant Fund, it started with the stimulus back in 2009, And this year, it's $473 million that are going for capital infrastructure improvements for transportation. The awards are small, but not to us. The minimum award is $10 million that's out there. And the deadline is June 3rd for this. So when I heard this discussion, I was kind of like, maybe this could be applicable for transit. And what it is we're looking at doing is aligning for their, if we were to do this grant application, aligning with the strategic goals or the strategic plans for the Department of Transportation that has a focus on fostering livable communities, taking our strategic plan that focuses on, well, basically continuous improvement part, the stewardship, and then also our customer service. And then with that, the new draft that's out there for Columbia Imagine, the comprehensive plan, heavily stresses the focus on transportation. You can see it in all the strategic priority areas that they're talking about. And so what I think that COMO Connect, this program or this project has done, is answered the call from the U.S. Department of Secretary's call to action for livability. Basically, he's saying that this means being able to take your kids to school, go to work, see a doctor, drop by the grocery store, post office, go to dinner and a movie, and play with your kids in a park, all without having to get in your car. And I believe that the COMO Connect, from what Drew's talked to me about and from what I've seen, we're answering that for this call to action, and I think we have a good chance. The cool thing with the grant, though, too, is that they can pick to choose smaller parts of it. So it's a really competitive grant. I don't know. I mean, I think we're awesome, but that's, I'm biased. But you can put that in the notes, Heather. But with that, I mean, they can pick and choose part of it. And so here's what we're looking to do for this. The COMO Connect, you know, they have 35 major connections with their different routes going, the neighborhood routes to their connectors. Currently, this is our model for our shelters. All right, so you know that you're probably not going to get rained on in that shelter, but you don't know where you're going. You don't know what bus is going to be coming by there. You don't really know anything about that. And you know that it's going to get kind of scary at night, right? I mean, it's glass. You can see out, but it's kind of gross. What we're looking at is for basically new innovative shelters for this. And this is the above and beyond what the grant would be providing for you. We're looking at shelters that, they're going to tell you where you're going, where you are, and how you're going to get there, and when you're going to get there. So these shelters that, and we've just grabbed some models from different areas around the United States. The one here, the shelters that we're proposing for the Tiger Grant Project will be solar powered to provide LED lighting for safety. When you do the longer hour times with those connections, it's going to get dark, especially in the winter time, and we want it to be safe and reliable. Along with that, too, we want these to be shelters where people want to wait and stop for the bus, and the information will be out there. The information will be, those connector routes that we talk about. We have a pretty good system with our bike lanes and our trail system going out. But if we really want to answer this call to a livable community that we have in our strategic plan, comprehensive plans, Department of Transportation's plan, we need to have a multimodal approach to this. And so with these we could do this one showing a bike share part of it, but even if it's just bike storage, if you had a safe place to put your bike, you could be a commuter in to grab to the bus to come in. Our buses currently only hold two bikes, two bikes on them, and that's not just because of our buses. That's the way that it's safer for the buses. Like, I think maybe the most I've seen is three on the front of a bus, but it's not, the performance is not there. So we need places where people can store their bikes covered, safe, so that they know if they make that part of their commute, it'll be safe. They don't have to worry about it. And the other part we're doing with this, and Drew mentioned this with the GPS information on the buses, the Tiger Grant, we're looking for applying for the signage, the smart, intelligent signage at our bus shelters, especially the connector ones. And this is where, so it's telling you, it's feeding back for the technology on the bus as well as with dispatch. So you can see not only the bus that's coming to you, but when it's coming, and then also your connector routes that you're going to. So you know where you're going to go, and you know how long it's going to take for you to get there. We also know that in order to be, basically, we recognize that to provide clean and safe fuel for our region, we need to look at other options. Currently, our diesel buses, 3.2 miles per gallon, I think, for them, and the emissions that they burn and the costs that they have with us are They're huge. We know that if we move to compressed natural gas for our bus fleet, that we would reduce, I know just the maintenance alone, not fuel savings, is $10,000 per bus. So we have in our current transportation improvement program planned 7 replacement buses for 40-foot, our 40-foot buses. If we were to do those for the CNG bus and the Tiger Grant were to replace those, that's, what, $70,000 in annual savings right there. We also have, you know, our 6 30-foot buses could be replaced. And so basically we're getting at about $130,000 annual savings just in maintenance because it's a longer service interval. They burn fuel, they burn cleaner, so to service the engines, you can stretch it out, you can go more miles. And then also we're just seeing that they perform better. Fuel savings on that is probably about, basically if we had a CNG, our CNG fueling station, be about $5,000 per bus savings of the fuel cost. So what we're looking for the Tiger Grant application is their talks is like, hey, this would be pretty awesome for us too. We could do CNG buses, we could do bus shelters, and the innovation with the signage and reporting back. Basically, as I've said, it's all awesome. I think we're awesome. And I think it aligns with the DOT strategic plan stuff. And I don't know, I kind of want to give kudos to the transit department for coming forward with this because I think it's answering a lot of the questions that have been out there. So I'll kick it back to Drew.
Thank you, Barbara. So we're just to wrap up, you know, the ultimate goal is to have buses that very, very rarely, if ever, have a picture like that where there's one person or two people on a bus. We want to get to a point where people are lining up to ride the bus, not just on campus, but everywhere, where buses are full and where a broad cross-section of the community makes a choice to ride, where elected officials could ride. If you look at that picture, or a city manager or community activists, I don't think, Ian, you were on the council at that time, but you were, and there's a lot of city employees on there as well, or a college president. Get to a point where everyone in the community can make a choice to ride a system that is efficient for them to use. So just to kind of recap what we see as the ultimate goals of a COMO Connect project, if you should approve. Connected network of routes with shorter travel times, more service, more of the day throughout more of the city, to live within our means, remain within our budget, to be completely customer focused, and to continue to be strategic and innovative and responsive and to design for growth. Thank you. And we can go back to any slides if there's anything that you want to see throughout there. We can kind of dial into those closer if you'd like.
Comments?
Could you talk a little bit more about the time the timetable of this?
Sure. Oh, as far as how long to
yeah,
a timeline?
Yeah, for the next.
So we think at the very minimum, you know, a year or two, 18 months is what it would take to put this together. We're talking about, you know, we haven't even bid out for shelters or any of those type of things yet. So that process, just pouring concrete and all of those pieces are going to take some lengthy amount of time.
Well, but, won't that be a little premature if we're analyzing what's
Oh, working? Sure. And I'm just giving that as an example of something that's going to take some duration. But the longer piece is exactly what you're talking about, the analysis of looking, because we won't even have the technology in place until August, and then actually looking at the current system and kind of, and looking and making sure that we made the right decisions with some of these routes. But even more importantly, having those public meetings, those public hearings where we, whether they go back to like a transit listening session like we did in the past, where I think that you guys did those in some of the wards, really, really taking a lot of time with that process and making sure that what we're doing is the right thing. So I anticipate that part being 6 months or more, or maybe just going on throughout, you know, all of the other planning. But we just certainly wouldn't want to jump into something like this, you know, rapidly. I think that would be a recipe for failure.
So in the meantime, for the next half year or year, we have what we have.
That's correct, yeah. Yeah, we would continue to do what we're doing for the meantime, right.
Now that's just to hop to the probably first couple of slides, we are presently working on elements of it. So the technology piece, we're driving hard on that. We've done the RFP. We've selected the company. We've got a contract in the works right now. So the idea that you'll have a smartphone app that you can, it'll tell you where the bus is, that's going to happen. So there are elements that are happening. But the full vision there would definitely take us at least a year to pull off.
I really like the integration of the multimodal. So, you know, I see areas, Old 63 had a bus route that was used pretty well, and it's a main connector. I don't see it on here at all, a connection between Stadium and Broadway with there's lots of apartments and neighborhoods there. So, I mean, at the minimum, and that will have to be fleshed out and have sure. public input. But at a minimum, having bike racks at least at bus stations will hopefully make it convenient for people to go into from the non-serve spots to the serve spots in a way.
And again, this is a draft. I mean, this is a first look at something, and we'll take all public feedback and all consideration into.
Well, I've got several comments, and first of all, I want to congratulate you, Drew, John, Barbara, and everybody else who's worked on this. I think this is a very exciting, visionary plan for the future. I'm especially pleased that you see this as a stepping stone to growth, that you've made that clear in this presentation. You're working within your current budget now, but you see further expansion of the system, and you're designing this in such a way that it can grow. I can tell you, I talked to a lot of Fourth Ward voters during January, February, and March about the future of the bus system, and almost 100% felt that the bus system should be improved and seemed willing to pay more to improve it one way or another. So I really think that this, when it gets out into the public domain, will inspire people to really support this idea that public transportation can be a great public service for everybody in the community and that people will use it. I really like the fact that you're taking care of current riders and taking the time to study how it's going to impact the people who depend on this and have no other option. Like Barbara, I'm anxious to see this be implemented as soon as possible, but at the same time, you know, there has to be that kind of balance. I'm very happy about the idea of parking rate increase going into the transit system. If I understood correctly, you're talking about that increase going in and then effectively doubling its value because it will bring in the FTA, it'll provide match for the FTA. I think that makes all kinds of sense. We know that it costs us as a city more to provide a roadway system for people to drive their private automobiles on for those same journeys as it would do to provide a public transportation system, and yet our current situation is, from the user's point of view, it's actually easier and less expensive and so on for people to use their private vehicles. So we can kind of shift that balance a little bit and really encourage people to use the system that we would in many occasions, many times, prefer them to use. And great idea that if people are paying a little more for their parking, that they then get a free bus ride out of it as well. That's wonderful. John, you said we cannot build our way out of congestion with more roads, and I want to congratulate you on saying that out in public, because not many people realize that, and not many people say it. But it's absolutely true, and this will establish a foundation for Columbia's transportation policy in the future that will, help us get on top of our transportation mobility needs. So congratulations on that. The efficient use of existing bus resources, what you've done here with the orbital pulse system, those 8 or 10 buses that are pulsing, end up, and I'm sure you realize this, spending a tremendous amount of their life, their operating life, within a mile or so of the Wabash station, and very little in all of the other, you know, dozens of square miles of city. You're getting the buses out evenly throughout the city here and creating all of these 35 connection points. So that's a huge improvement there. I like the east-west and north-south, you know, axes being the kind of the framework for this. A couple of things come to mind with that. Maybe making those really rapid routes, express routes, something that might lay the foundation in many years' time for a bus rapid transit system on those routes. I believe the Capital Improvement Plan has $100,000 for the technology that sets the traffic signals ahead. Maybe if we could bring that forward, I think, Barbara, we thought that was on for a couple of years from now. If that could be brought forward to coincide with this so that those could be fast routes, maybe ticket machines at the bus stops on those routes so that people have their ticket in hand when they get on the bus and we're not waiting, and make those really fast routes. Making them as simple as possible, I think, is important. A lot of people don't use the bus system because they just can't visualize it. I expect you thought of this, and I can see the sense, especially with having buses going both ways around those routes, in spreading them out somewhat. But it'll be really easy to explain to somebody if they just went straight up and down Providence and straight back and forward across Broadway. But I think that this makes a lot of sense as well. I like all of the discussion, the GIS information, having the information at the bus stop. I have Columbia Transit programmed into my cell phone. When I arrive at a bus stop, I very often end up calling to find out the status of the 101 South right now. So I've got a sense if it's running behind, it might be quicker for me to bike. But if it's coming in a few minutes, then I'll wait for it. And I like the branding. I'm not any kind of expert on that, but it looks good to me. And I think mainly the goal of this is to build a buzz in the community, get as many people aware of some big exciting changes coming in transit, and that'll increase the public support for it and kind of leverage that whole thing up. So great job, John. Thanks so much.
I had a couple other thoughts. I have a question. You know, I know it's a long process, but without the shelters and without the Tiger funding, is there a way, if this is a cost neutral and we have enough buses now and we have enough drivers now, what would prevent us from starting this and begin to see how it works without, you know, hopefully the technology will be there, but with what we have, and we can start to get a head start on getting feedback.
Well, and we figured that would be the case, but FTA, in its infinite wisdom, doesn't allow you to change routes without public process. And so we will have to do a public process to change the routes to meet this. And so there's a process we have to follow. Federal Transit Administration tells us how to do that. And that's what Drew was describing. It's going to take at least a year, probably, to get through that piece.
Really? Because I know we changed a lot of routes a year ago, moved shelters around. I thought the process was open, but we did it in the summer. I mean, it didn't seem like a year.
But we didn't do a major change in it. It was just tweaking some of the routes. This is a complete overhaul.
So this requires a longer.
It's the difference between, like, an environmentalist impact statement when you're putting a road across open field versus it's a CE categorical exclusion when you're just widening a road. And so it's a much longer process to change the whole system.
Okay. And then I'm still wondering, because I haven't heard the details in the analysis, whether at some stage consultants still might not be a good thing, not only in terms of analysis, and knowing what other communities, what worked and didn't work in similar communities, but also looking at funding mechanisms, because as Mr. Thomas said, I think we can't stay at the at where we are in terms of funding and have a really good transit system that serves the city. We have to look at increasing the funding.
For the RFP, which encompassed a lot of this, I actually asked a consultant what that would run, and they gave us a ballpark of $125,000 to $250,000. Didn't know, depending on what you wanted to do. It's not cheap to get a lot of data to have them come in and gather the data for us. So we're trying to do this in-house. We're hearing you, and we think we can answer the bell.
I think it's a really impressive effort. Mr. Thomas is our biggest expert on this, and I would describe him as giddy. So I think that's a pretty good indicator that, that we're on the right track. I mean, I liked every aspect of the proposal. I liked the vision of it. I liked the total rebranding. There is a level of when we talked with the when we met with the schools and talked about that collaboration, where the kids don't want to ride the city bus. So moving away from that, I'm not an expert on branding either. I like Conwell Connect, though. That has a it has a ring to it. I'm really pleased to see, like, I know a lot of transit riders where it's integral to their lives, and it's a you know, bringing in Lake of the Woods and Scott Boulevard, you really nailed the two that the biggest gaps in our current system. I'm impressed with what we can do. I do have one question. Would the proposed $10 increase in parking fees, will that gain us all of our potential match? Because I feel losing out on federal match dollars is pretty close.
You think it'll get close, but you know, it depends.
Because that seems, you know, I think we all agree that the transit could use an infusion, as could a lot of other things. The presentation on stormwaters is haunting me, amongst other issues. But to not anything, anytime we can spend $2 for a dollar investment, I think that we should definitely make that a priority of rising up to meet them, to capture all of the match dollars that we can get that you know, really efficient. You know, you just get a lot more two for one. That's a great something we should definitely move forward on.
And are you thinking in terms of the match? Is there a match required for the Tiger Grant?
No, it's two.
No, so what we're talking about there is the operating grant.
Right, so that's flexible. However much you raise, the FTA will max it.
Well,
match it.
Well, it's a set amount, but right. So, for instance, in fiscal year 13, we actually can't meet all of the match that's available to us. So there's about $2.1 million available.
Got
looks
it.
Like we'll be able to match about $1.8. So going into 2014, we have about the same amount available. We hope that with this, what we're doing here, we'll be able to get very close to getting every dollar from the federal government that we have available.
Possibly
to us.
Can.
Yeah, right.
What did you say? How much of that 2.1 did?
So I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's 2.1, and we got about 1.8 that we're matching this year.
So that's 300,000 difference, and I think we're talking about 292.
Pretty
and that's,
close. Yeah.
You know, that's an estimate from the parking side of it. So how it actually plays out, we may be north of that, or we tend to be conservative. So I doubt we'd be less than that. But.
Will the parking increase require an ordinance, or
that would be part of the budget process,
mm-hmm.
and it would require an ordinance.
There would be some reason to raise the parking rates anyway, in the sense that there's a waiting list at all of the garages but one, and that garage is nearly full. If it's not full, someone here might know.
They are full.
They're all full.
They're all oversold.
Right, and while it may be, one could make the argument, is that right, that they're all full now?
Yes.
And
most
well,
are oversold. The Fifth and Walnut is not oversold. I think we're within 59 permits at last count, but
yeah.
Going into summer, so they'll be down some.
But one could make the argument that, well, it might be onerous for some of the current permit holders to pay an extra $10. You know, it's unfair that other people are waiting months. I don't know what the average wait time is, do you? But, you know, anecdotally, I talk to people who've been waiting a long time.
The Plaza's long, and 8th and Cherry is longer than the other mm-hmm. four. So.
Yeah.
Plus, and we're getting ready to give people a great new alternative.
Right.
And so I guess there would be some motivation to raise the rates anyway in terms, you know, if you use an economic argument for how do you allocate scarce resources, and this would be a good place to put them in that at the current rates, the parking fund is self-funding, am I correct? It's meeting all of its obligations. Mm-hmm. And this, you know, I don't know. So this is sort of a not well thought out comment in the sense, but or rather,
you didn't have the information before, so it's ad lib. It's okay.
But it seems to me that would be a second reason to follow the, you know, to explore this recommendation further.
I just want to make sure that we fully use our transit, our new reformed transit commission in this process.
Yeah, they will be part of the public hearing process. We will actually, you know, work with them to do the public hearings and you know, go around the community through them.
I am surprised to hear that it takes that long, that it's an FTA requirement to go through the process, to go through a process that takes that long. I guess my question would be, what do you think is the minimum time it would take?
You know, it's hard to say, Mr. Schmidt. I never want to overpromise. And so, you know, I want you to understand it's going to take a while. It's not going to be here by August. It's just not going to happen. We would like to have it in place by next August, if possible. Mm-hmm. That's our goal. And my staff pulls at my shirt sleeve every time I say that because they think it's going to take longer. But I would like to get it in place as quickly as we can. I'd like to do it before the students come to town. Next August, because it's hard to change horses in the middle of the stream.
So. Mm-hmm. It does make me wonder if we ought to have on our legislative agenda to look into at the federal level why this process takes so long. I understand that it needs to be fair and it needs to include all parties, but I could see situations where you would need to change it quicker than that and be stuck having to wait a year and a half.
There's things called environmental justice. You know, you got to look at where you can't serve one piece of the population without serving the other, and you got to make sure all that's fairly distributed. And so there's just a lot of things to go through in that. And so, you know, by next August, that's pushing pretty hard. By the time we have all the public hearings, we get all the documents printed, for the maps and all the technology going and get it.
Oh, that's all going to be on my phone now, isn't it?
So, you know, it's still going to take a long time.
Right, but maybe we will need to start at that point and finish up fine-tune it after that, you know.
You don't want to go into a system without everything in place because then people get frustrated.
Let me make
some comments. You know, I sort of draw a subjective distinction between the term utility and the term enterprise, because transit is really kind of both, right? You could interchangeably call them both. When I think of utility, I think of flushing the toilet, you know, and it either works or it doesn't. Nothing dramatic. I don't really want to think about it, right? When I think of an enterprise, I think of somebody that's trying to provide a service that maybe I want to buy, maybe I don't. And so it's up to the seller of the service to sell me. You know, I don't have to buy the service, but I might want to if it's worth it to me. So what I find very uplifting about this is I see transit moving from a utility to an enterprise, and I think this is a great start. One of the things that's always, and I'll be very frank about this, you know, I will be frank, right, is that when I talk to the individual staff members of transit, I've always been impressed with how bright and smart they are and how much they know. But when I've looked at transit as an organization, It just has always seemed to have a stifled culture. Nothing ever really changed. It was, you know, this is the way we've done it for 25 years. And there was always that paradox for me. How can such smart people be involved in a culture that just is not willing to change? So what I see today is a breakout of that culture. And so I am very excited to see this, because in transit are some very smart people, and I feel like we're freeing them, we're unleashing them. And I feel like you kind of used the word restructure. The way I look at this and the way I think transit needs to look at this, I think you're running a startup organization right now. And the reason I think it needs to be taken at that degree of seriousness, we'll go back and compare Columbia to other Midwest college towns. And frankly, we are an aberration. You know, we are the Midwestern college town with, you know, 20 rides per capita. Really, it's 10 when you take away the commuter parking, the parking lots from the students to Brady Commons, which puts us into, Jeff City territory, really, you know, and Springfield territory. And the reason for that is a generational choice, in my opinion, that was made, you know, 30, 35 years ago, where Midwestern college towns decided that they had to decide about the future of their transportation. Should they build parking garages, or should they build integrated, collaborative transit systems? And when we look at the history of Iowa City, Ames, Champaign, Lawrence, you know, they chose integrated, collaborative transit systems. And the generation of planners here in Columbia, at the university, chose to build parking garages with 22,000 parking places. And so the culture, the decision was made in 1980. And we are living with the results of that right now, which means that interest in a collaborative, integrative buy-in has really never existed. And I know that they were frustrated at our pushiness, my pushiness, and we've been sort of frustrated at their lack of buy-in. And the end result of that is, you know, we don't have riders. We don't have the customers these other towns have. And again, getting back to how many customers are out there? Well, Ames has 100 rides per capita. You know, we've got really 20. We've got really 10 rides per capita if you exclude the commuter shuttle, the shuttle, which is really not part of transit, in my view. And so that's the way collaborative university communities work, and that's our challenge. It's a huge challenge, and it's a challenge that, you know, we're going to have to overcome. I mean, and that's why this is not going to be as easy as redrawing routes, because we have not made the sale. It's interesting, and historically, many of these other collaborations originated at the universities. They originated with student bodies coming to communities and saying, you know, we want you to run buses through our campus. And that's just not the culture here. And so cracking that nut, that is the real challenge we have. But I think the idea that let's start over is the right way to do this. Everything is on the table. I think one thing to think about, and one thing that's going to make this kind of complicated, is that you can divide, if we exclude, let's exclude paratransit right now, okay, because that's a specialty type of deal. But there are certain groups of customers that we have the potential to market to. The first group are the core riders, the people who need buses to get to work, to the hospital, to doctor's offices. I personally don't think we can have a sustainable, robust bus system if we rely on that. I just don't think the numbers are going to be there. I think I think, and I know I've been criticized because I've been focused so much on students, but in my view, that's where these other communities have come up with the business, they've come up with the revenue, they've come up with the customers, and that's how they fuel their buses. So we can never forget the core group of non-students. But if we are successful with the other, then there'll be more revenue for the core bus. But a second pool of customers are the downtown students and Stevens College students. And I think that, if we change FASTCAT, you're going to have to address the fact that why did Stevens College buy 500 passes? Well, they bought them so that the students could get downtown and could get to the rec center. And I know it's a first draft. It really, I didn't see the kind of connectivity in the first draft here that would be appealing, in my view, to a Stevens College administrator. So again, that's something we're going to have to look at, because 500 students, the market rate is $150 a year, and we're undercharging that. So that's $75,000 a year of revenue that you really need to have. We need to get that and provide the service. So I'm not sure they're going to buy the initial route that you came up with. The second part of that downtown group are, let's face it, Brookside. You know, they're going to have 1,500 students, 2,000. So, you know, you're talking there about the possibility of $300,000 worth of revenue. And so we're going to have to go to them and say,
we didn't design that route purposely just because of that. You know, that's that orbiter park and ride route. That's
no, but
the
they
we got to make sure all that works for not just the CID, but for Stevens,
right,
for the university.
Right.
For
I'm just saying that if it doesn't work for them, you lose $300,000 in revenue.
They're going to be at the table. They got to be.
All
at
right.
the table.
I'm just pointing out the complexity of this.
Sure.
The second group that we need to target is black and gold, and I think that what you're even the first draft here really would probably be more attractive for them, because it doesn't just go to Brady Commons. You know, it actually goes past Brady Commons and goes into the city, so you don't have to get off the bus to go to Shakespeare's from there. But again, just from the number of, you got 6,000 potential customers, you know, at $150 a year, you got $900,000 in revenue there if we can get them. We got about half of them. Need to get
and the route goes both ways. It just doesn't
right.
go one way.
So that,
going both directions.
I see this kind of initiative as offering actually a higher level of service to that cohort of students, which might make that sale even easier. But that's $900,000 that, you know, you got to get into the system. The hard nut to crack is campus students, 8,000 of them, right? They believe they're a pedestrian campus, and to get them to sign on, you're going to have a lot of connectivity through campus. We've not made any sales yet. We haven't made the sale.
Right.
We tried, and again, how you design that inner core route, you know, frankly, they need to be at the table. Hopefully the new Transportation Advisory Board will get them at the table, because they need to tell us what route they want to buy the tickets, because we want to provide the service to that 8,000 group of students. So that's another group. The last group, which is a large potential group of customers, we're just kind of moving into, and that is Columbia Public Schools. I mean, there's enormous opportunity here. I mean, the fact that they spend $10 million a year on busing. So they spend, for each student every day, $3, you know, to ride a school bus that rides one loop. Now, we can't take their whole system because it's broad, but, you know, we have ways of providing a higher level of service to these students than they now have at less cost. We can save them money. They can add resources to our system. So for me, I just see this as a first step, an opening step, and they're really changing the whole system. So for me, the one theme here that I want to say is when we talk about more funding, I don't view it as more public funding. I view it as more customer funding, because I believe there are millions of dollars of customer funding available, of willing buyers of the service, only modeling after other Midwestern universities. So that, for me, would be my emphasis and my focus. But for me, I view this as an exciting breakout startup. We're moving from, let's move from a utility to a real enterprise.
And I want to go to what you said, to all those points, but to start with the staff. You know, they are very, very talented. And you may not have seen it collectively, but I do. And one of the things that we struggled with every time we talk about changing the routes is the Wabash. We spent a lot of money, millions of dollars, to upgrade that facility. And so to pull it out, you know, it's a waste of us. So what are we going to do with the Wabash? And so we're not going to worry about that right now. That's not why we're here. But that was the anchor around our neck, I will say, is what do you do with a multi-million dollar building if you're not going to use it, which will have the staff in it, but we're not bringing the buses there. To get back to the university, we got to sell them a system that works. And I think if we do that, they will come to the table. And if we bring them a system, which we're showing here, that's connected to all the city, and you can buy a day pass for $3 and you can ride the whole system all day long, that's something we can sell them, something I think they'll invest in. But we got to prove it, and that's the key, is proving it to them.
And
as we go around, you know, we designed it as core routes. I call them city routes, the crosses, and the ones out as the neighborhood routes to me, we're taking people to the grocery store and back on the same route. You know, we made sure that they connected to grocery stores, health care, those kind of things, and so they don't have to go all the way across the city to do their shopping. And so, you know, that's a sale. That's a plus. And so, you know, as we move forward, yeah, we're going to have some more funding to grow. But we're trying to stay within our means. And our goal is not to spend any more than we have in the past.
Very simple metrics. How much are you selling? How many people are riding?
Correct. Correct.
So that's our challenge. That's your challenge. And I think this is really a great start.
Did you see how we went till 8 o'clock at night, Monday through Friday? You know, council's got to be over by 8 because we got to get them home.
That's not a problem. We may be starting at 7 a.m.
I like that.
I just want to reemphasize, I think you're absolutely right that by providing a better service to the city in general, it will be more effective and attractive to students. And Carlos Alveros had a study that was presented to council, and he analyzed how many students live off campus and are not served by the transit system. So we should be looking at that. And I had an intern, and she lived south of Providence. So there's students that live all over the city, and there's students that work all over the city, and they want to go to different parks. So being a student is much more than just being on campus. We know that, and so that's going to be part of the whole success of the long-term goal.
Bob, I liked your groups and so on, but there's one additional group that I think is really important here, which is community members that live all over the city and already own a car and currently use their car for almost, a lot of them own two cars or three cars in their families and use them for almost all of their journeys, but would like the option of the bus, would pay the fare, and would probably support some kind of public funding for the bus system to create the kind of system that both students and community members enjoy in the other college towns that you mentioned. The possibility being even that if they have two or three cars, they might sell one of those cars and keep, on average, $9,000 a year in their pockets with which to support some more efficient modes. But certainly the college students are the number one client, the most prolific, most numerous, the ones most quick adopters to take on the bus system.
I do suggest that you take this presentation, John, to Chancellor Deaton and the vice chancellors and the senior staff and the board of curators, and ask for their input on it. And another thing you might, you know, consider the two axis core routes cross are going to cross somewhere, and at the moment we kind of have them crossing because they're a split: Broadway, Providence, Ash Street, over to College. But one place they could cross would be right outside the Student Center on Rollins Road. There, deviate the north-south one across, deviate the east-west one down. And then that's where the customer base is, right there at the heart of campus. I think that's really how the Champaign-Urbana system works, and that might be very attractive to the university and to the students to have them go right in there. And Wabash Station, yeah, we really have to, if Wabash is not going to be a major transit center anymore, really think of a great new way to repurpose that. It's a beautiful building. It's got a lot of assets, and we must come up with something that's going to really help the city.
I'll share a couple of other items. So on a personal level, just a personal story, I tried to think about how I could use the bus to get to work. You know, schedule might allow twice a week for me to do that. As it stands, due mainly to the house that my family and I fell in love with, it would be a one-hour walk to get to the nearest bus stop with the current system. So that's not possible, right? And so with the change that the staff's come up with here, I'd have a five-minute walk. So that's the order of magnitude I see when I look at it. It's just, you know, from my own perspective. And that's true, you know, the Scott Boulevard one for me is what you mentioned. That's true for thousands of other people that live right off of Scott Boulevard. So that was one of the compelling things that leapt out to me personally. The other is, as a city manager, I just want to embarrass folks and ask them to stand up. Whoever has fingerprints on this, and if you don't stand, I'll call your name anyway. So please, I want the folks to see who you are. And Leland and Barbara, too, please. And John and Laura, you as well. Matt Gehrke, yeah. Dr. Gehrke, I should say.
Oh, Steve Sapp.
Steve Sapp, there he is. See, we're going to call your name anyway. I couldn't be prouder of this group. They really have truly listened and come back with something that, you know, everyone's been asking for. PedNet, Comet, and I see you here. Thank you for coming. The commission, the Transit Commission. Thank you, staff. Would the commission please take some credit here? Well-deserved. I was able to go to their last meeting, I think, and tease them about this meeting, so without revealing anything, really. So thank you for coming, and thank you for your service. So this has been a team effort, a group effort, and there is a lot of talent in this room, and I'm proud to be a part of it. So a couple of housekeeping items I know that affect this profoundly. You probably know we have two key positions in transit that are empty at this point. And given your feedback today, which I'm taking fairly positively, we will fill those then. We'll move forward with that. If you hadn't felt like we'd hit the target here, we would probably have left them open due to budget constraints. But given the ideas that we have here, we can't afford to fill those if you say yes. So I'm hearing not only yes, but why can't you start it sooner from most members? So
And how do we get more information so we can look at the details, and when will the input hearing process start?
Yeah, we have maps for you for when you leave, so you can take it with you. We have maps for the press and anybody that wants them as well. And so and the public will start as soon as we can, so we can start advertising and getting those things out here. Of course, we can't get it done quick enough, I'll just tell you that, because we want to get it engaged.
So So will this material be on the web so people can see it right now?
Yes, ma'am. Okay. It's going to be on the web before, hopefully the end of the day, if not, or tomorrow.
We have recorded this, and so it will be available in that fashion as well, almost better than just giving the presentation. And we intend to engage, right? We intend to visit any Kiwanis Club that will have us, any Rotary, any Cosmopolitan, any Lions Club. We're going to take it on the road and listen some more.
And neighborhood association.
Neighborhood association, absolutely. So there'll be quite a bit of work. That's part of that year, you know, event horizon, you might call it, as well. But we can do some things now, and we will. For example, the technology. That's going to happen first, funny enough, because we've been working on it for about a year. The mayor can probably tell you how many days we've been working. He's been waiting, every one of them. I know there's a calendar somewhere. We are going to be able to deliver that, you know, before the year from now, and we intend to do that. Budget items will come up sooner, so you'll be asked to make a decision about that in the budget process within a few months for implementation in October, for example. So that's these are layered items, and we'll take them all. We'll do all of them simultaneously, but there is a logical order with which we have to approach it. And you know, as frustrating as it will be to deliver the routes, that, in fact, may be the end of the process, so to speak. So.
And Barbara Buffalo will be working hard to try to get that Tiger grant.
That's right.
A couple of other thoughts, Mike. There is a developer who's presenting a plan for a student housing building to P&Z fairly soon and later to council, who has expressed a willingness to put money into the bus system in return for not having to build as many parking spaces as codes might require. And I think that's a great opportunity going forward and very logical. We don't really want to be forcing student housing in the downtown area to build more parking, because that's going to just put more pressure on the roads. And if we can do some kind of a trade like that, that can simultaneously reduce the traffic congestion, increase the demand for transit, and get some money into transit. Secondly, I'd be interested to know if anybody in the city has had any conversations with Zipcar or one of the larger car share operations. I know from Champaign-Urbana several years ago they wanted Zipcar to come. Zipcar said, well, you're below our threshold, the size of a city, and we don't want to take the risk. They negotiated a revenue guarantee. We're familiar with those. And so Zipcar came, and it was wildly successful. The revenue guarantee was never close to being touched, and Zipcar is now an establishment there.
Where was that?
In Champaign and Urbana. And it, obviously, in conjunction with a bus system, there are those journeys that that people who don't have a car, or maybe families that only have one car, will still need to make and need a second car at a particular time. And that's such an easy, flexible way to you know, add to the capacity of the transportation system without owning more cars and clogging up the roads further. So, be interesting to see if Zipcar would be interested in doing something like that.
We'll contact him. I have not. We will do that.
I believe the new housing development is looking into, or said they would have Zipcar for that.
And the university has WeCar, and it maybe that would be a place to start. It's a similar program that I think specializes in campuses. And yes, Collegiate Housing Partners are would like to have a couple of WeCars permanently at their location, and that would be part of a, you know, multifaceted transportation offering for the students living in their housing and other members of the program that are close by.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very productive meeting. Go ahead.